Well, Monday night, as some of you hopefully were praying for, I was in Vauxhall seeing a play by Riding Lights. It's a play based on Job, and I was part of a panel discussion in a Q&A session after the play about science and faith. It was a good evening, quite a good turnout for a cold winter's night in the middle of Vauxhall. Not a place I don't think I'd ever been to before. In fact, I'd seen that play a couple of weeks before in a place I'm much more familiar with. That's South Kensington. I'd seen that play in a church which was opposite Imperial College, actually opposite the entrance to the Blackett Laboratory, which is the physics building there. That's the place I did my doctorate, just behind that building. And it reminded me, as I prepared today, that not 56 years ago, it reminded me that 36 years ago was the first time I went to Imperial College. I'd come down from Leicester, a fresh-faced 20-year-old who knew nothing, and went to Imperial College and was searching for the office where I was going to have my interview. I wandered into the admin office of the atmospheric physics group in physics, and there was nobody there. There was nobody anywhere. I thought, where have I come? Where are the people? And as I'm wondering, how do I find the office of Martin Miller, who's going to interview me and hopefully was going to offer me a student post to work with him for 3 years, a man appeared out of a side door in an old grey coat. And he said, "What do you want?" And I thought, oh, he must be the caretaker. He was grumpy enough to be the caretaker, I have to say. So I told him what I wanted, and he said, "Follow me." So he led me down the corridor to another office, and lo and behold, that was the place I was supposed to be. And so the interview started with Martin and Mitch, and I was a little bit surprised half an hour in when the same man who was wearing the brown coat came in, sat down, and started asking me questions. Turned out he wasn't the caretaker, he was the head of the department. And he actually had a yes or a no about whether I was going to go there. He said yes, so I did go for 3 and a bit years. How we see people outwardly, according to our expectations, does not always get to the reality of who they are. How we see people is often shaped by our own view and vision, and things that we expect people to be like. In this What Jesus series that we've been going through since the start of the year, we have been trying to take another look at Jesus, a fresh look at Jesus. That's not a bad thing to do, regardless of how long you've been a Christian or coming to church for a few years or 56 years. We've seen that he's the disturber of life that draws people to wholeness. We've seen he's the one who, in the face of death and sickness, brings peace and healing. He's the one who the forces of disorder and evil recognize as the Holy One of God, often long before people around him did. He was the one who was tempted by Satan, the opposer, the adversary, who tried to turn Jesus away from God's purpose to plans shaped by human purpose and desires. And in Lent, the period of 6 weeks, not 40 days, leading up to Easter, that period mirrors Jesus' journey through the wilderness, his temptations. It's time to ask again, what Jesus is shaping our living and our faith, to examine our motives and our actions, to allow God to help us examine our hearts. And through the next 4 weeks, we're going to consider Jesus' words on four things that can twist out of shape our heart from that which God would want for us. We're going to look at power. And we're going to look at money. And we're going to look at relationships. And today we're going to look at the focus of our hearts. Now, while evil recognised Jesus quickly for the truth of who he was, it took a bit longer for others to understand. And when they did, just like the caretaker at Imperial College, they didn't always get it right. Peter, in the passage before this, is the first one to recognise Jesus as the Christ, the long-expected anointed one. It's the one who had been expected to come from God to set life right. And yet his comfortable view of Jesus didn't sit well with Jesus' own. Jesus explains to Peter and the other disciples that God's anointed one would suffer and be rejected by the religious establishment which shaped the life of the nation and kept the nation's story alive with God, would be killed and would rise again to life. Now, that was not comfortable for Peter to hear. Not comfortable if you started making friends with this person you think is going to be on top and in the end is going to be put at the bottom, and you're probably wondering what on earth is going to happen to you along the way. Not comfortable because, like so many of his generation, shaped by generations before him, longing and waiting, he expected that this Messiah would put his lot, his nation, his religion at the top of the pecking order. He was comfortable with visions of victory. He liked that idea of Jesus, and that is still a temptation today. Struck me on the day the BBC reported the death of Billy Graham. They also reported that the leader of a church in Singapore had been arrested trying to flee the country the day before he was sentenced for a £50 million fraud, along with the pastor of the church and four other people, because they'd used the money to support the pastor's wife's pop career. People are comfortable with visions of victory and success. Peter liked that Jesus. And we do too. The Jesus who is always there for us, who looks after us, who makes things nicer for us, who blesses us. But just like the caretaker, that's not the truth. Peter gets it wrong. Peter takes Jesus to one side and he begins to rebuke him, to tell him off. He does it privately, away from the other disciples, a quiet word, you know, in Jesus' ear. Maybe it was the concern of a friend. It's hard to see people suffer and die, or make mistakes which lead them to painful journeys. But Jesus' reaction suggests that Peter has other motives. Jesus' reaction is immediate and it is extreme. Jesus turned away from Peter and looked at his disciples and he rebuked Peter. This is no quiet, private conversation to avoid embarrassment. This is a public dressing down of ginormous proportions. Get behind me, Satan. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. Satan is the one who tries to subvert Jesus' uncomfortable task before God by the comfort of human needs and desires. That had been the experience of 40 days in the desert. So is this a bit extreme? Is this a bit over the top, calling Peter Satan? Or is he warning Peter and the others that seeking a comfortable Jesus is rooted in the same temptations and testing that Satan brought to Jesus? To seek the comfortable way, shaped by human desires and concerns, which is dramatically different from God's way for him. Now, this telling off of Peter and the words that follow, that he says to Peter and the disciples, are some of the most uncomfortable and disturbing words that Jesus ever spoke. And he didn't just speak it to them. He didn't just speak it to Peter and his closest friends. It says that he also spoke it to the crowds that were with him. And that means we can't lay them aside, these words, that they're meant for a few special people. These are meant for all of us. And it warns us of the real danger of just cherry-picking the bits of Jesus we want, the bits of Jesus that fits with our idea and our idea of religion and our way of life and our hearts. Whoever wants to be my disciple, whoever wants to be my disciple. These are not optional words. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. I don't think we can grasp how cutting those words were. We don't live in an area of public executions, of people being degraded publicly through the streets of the capital city and being executed outside the walls by an occupying force. I mean, within your memory, in some parts of Europe, that's been true. But not here. Not here. And Jesus uses that image, which would have been a weekly occurrence for those people. He uses that image to say, this is what it's like if you want to be my disciple. And for some in our work today, this is no inner metaphor about a change of heart and a change of direction. Some of our brothers and sisters in the world face the possibility of death for faith every day of their lives. And for those of us who live in apparently more comfortable places for faith, the danger to faith can be just as serious. And if we're going to face up to it, then Lent has to be more than giving up a bit of chocolate for 6 weeks, or even stopping using plastic bottles. This is a call to let go of what shapes so much of our lives, to lay them down before God as a wholehearted offering of the whole of our lives to God for the sake of God's purpose in the world. A costly calling. And how do we translate this into our lives? How do we translate this into our everyday living? I mean, some people give up much to serve Jesus. Yet how do we each take hold of this or allow it to be embraced into our living every day in the ordinary lives that we have? What examples might we give to shape our path? Well, I could give you examples about the people I met at IMC in Birmingham who actually have given up much to go to India and Africa and Bangladesh to serve Jesus there, who are trying to offer themselves more fully to Jesus, because that's what he's asked them to do. I could give you that example. But the danger is sometimes those examples seem too far out of reach for us. They seem so distant from our calling and our living with God. Or maybe you need some rules. Maybe we all need some rules which are to be obeyed, and that will enable us to live this way. You know, the danger with rules are that outwardly obeyed and inwardly we fight against them and become angry about them. Now, I wonder if the best way for us to follow this path is to allow it to embrace us more fully. The best way to do that is to offer our lives to God each and every day and ask him through our life's journey to show us how we express Jesus' words and in our attitudes, in the things that drive us, in our relationship, in our activities. To confess that the Jesus we know and follow is too comfortable. And to ask for the courage to allow the uncomfortable Jesus to shape us. This is an act of will and an act of God's life within us. Our yes, weak and feeble, to his yes, brought to life in our lives through Jesus and through the Spirit. This has to be a daily walk with Jesus, a daily offering of our lives to God. So don't make the mistake I did back in 1982. Jesus is not a caretaker come to serve you as you want. Jesus is the Anointed One, the Holy One of God, the Lord of life, come to ask us some uncomfortable questions. And it's not a 3-year studentship that's at stake. Our lives depend on it.